Welcome to the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. If you're looking to get more out of your Shenandoah Valley experience, then this is the podcast for you. You'll meet interesting people, musicians, and comedians that perform here and find out more about what you can do and see. Whether you live here or plan to visit, listen to explore what makes our unique slice of heaven. Now here's your host, Don Davis Womack.
Hello, laughers. Get ready for another fun episode. Today, we have a special treat in store for you. Joining us on the show is the incredibly talented and hilarious comedian, Nathan Carlson. Nathan hails from rural Virginia and has performed at clubs all over the country, including Comedy Zone, The Funny Bone, and Sandman Comedy Club. He has a dry, sarcastic sense of humor and is one of the best in the business at crowd work, who will have you laughing from the very beginning. He has featured for Bobcat Goldthwait, Michael Palasek, Ian Bragg, and many others. Nathan Carlson has been gracing the stage with his comedic genius, captivating audiences with his wit and humor. From sharing side-splitting antidotes to shedding light on the lighter side of life, he's undoubtedly a force to be reckoned with in the world of comedy. Today, we dive deeper into the mind behind the laughter and uncover the inspirations and stories that fuel his comedic fire. Welcome to the show, Nathan. It's great to have you on today.
Hi, Don. Thanks for having me.
This is very exciting.
It's very fun.
It is very fun. We're sitting out my dining room in my house right now. This is cool. Mm-hmm. Pretty light outside. We're doing all right.
It is. You're at war with the HOA? I mean, there's a lot going on.
Who isn't at war with their HOA?
There's a lot going on here in Harrisonburg.
There is. But I'm excited you're here. I have both enjoyed seeing you on the comedy circuit and working with you on some of our X2 comedy shows. You're really hilarious.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, you are welcome. So this is going to be fun. Let's get into it, shall
we? Let's do it.
All right.
Let's get your HOA on the phone right now. We're going to straighten this out.
It wouldn't be life if you didn't have that going on, right? Comedy often stems from personal experiences. Nathan, can you share a bit about your journey into the world of comedy and what sparked your passion for making people laugh?
Oh, sure. So I was always, it's always funny growing up, but where I live, the places there typically wasn't a place to do stand-up. You know, there weren't open mics. I could perhaps travel 2 or 3 hours to Atlanta to do mics and stuff there, but I didn't know how to get into it at the time. And really the catalyst for me, my small business was crashing and burning. I was drinking myself to sleep, and I finally decided that things had gotten bad enough for me to start doing stand-up comedy. So for me, it actually, I find a tragedy in my life as being a great driver for, comedic art.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you just decided to get out of your comfort zone or more out of your pain, maybe.
Yeah, I actually, being on stage, I find it a great way to just sort of wring out the demons, shake off whatever's ailing you.
Yeah. Comedy's very healing.
Yeah.
I find. And that's one of the many reasons why I enjoy doing it. The life of a comedian, speaking of that, is filled with ups and downs. How do you handle moments when jokes don't land as expected, and what keeps you motivated to continue refining your craft?
Because I do crowd work, I stay somewhat fluid in my sets. I'll have an idea. I'll look at a crowd and think, okay, I'm going to do this bit, going to do this one, not going to do this one. You know, I'm going to skew my material a little bit for an older crowd versus a younger crowd, depending on where I'm at. And so sometimes I will throw a joke out there that I would expect to land with a particular crowd and it doesn't. And so then I'll just kind of change directions, kind of switch up, maybe what I had planned for my set. So I really, in my sets, I try and stay pretty loose. Mm. Cause oftentimes something will come up in crowd work that naturally leads to a different bit than say the one I planned to do next. And, I just try and stay real fluid, real relaxed up there.
Why did you decide to get into leaning into crowd work? It's very popular right now.
It is. It's so hot right now. So that was sort of long before I started stand-up, the sort of quick on my feet, you know, could say something funny in the moment or insult somebody in the moment. That was something that I was just sort of naturally good at. Mm-hmm. And what it was interesting, when I first started stand-up, I was so focused on my material and the jokes that I wrote that if I got heckled or something like that, it was almost like I had to stop and, you know, pull my brain out of fifth gear and try and get it into third so I could respond. And it was so clunky, it didn't work. Obviously, you have to be pretty quick. But it was quite a while. I'd say it was a couple of years into comedy, at least, until you know, I was able to be relaxed enough during my set doing my material that I could switch kind of seamlessly to crowd work and back and forth to material and things like that.
How did you get good at it?
Being real bad at it a lot until, just like anything in comedy, it's you just keep doing it until you finally realize the way you should have been doing it all along.
Yeah, that's true. And I feel like each level, you just have a whole new set of challenges.
Yeah, people, and when you start talking to people,
yeah,
crazy stuff comes out. I've had, I asked a lady what she thought the hardest part about having kids was. She said going to jail for them. That was one of the more interesting answers I've gotten. Talking to a guy and I had him come up on stage and show me his memorial tattoo for his dead son. Mm. That was a real curveball.
Yeah.
Yeah, I bombed.
Okay, I was going to say, and how did you handle that?
I bombed. There were all of five people in that audience, and when one of them is showing you memorial tattoos and then gets mad about it later, even though you're not talking about it, it's tough to get the other four on your side.
I see.
I ate it on that one.
It can happen. What do you think you learned from that, though?
When there are five people,
mm-hmm.
don't talk to the drunkest one.
Okay.
Pick at least the second drunkest.
Okay.
And talk to that one.
Was this at a dive bar or something?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. There's a fantastically stabby bar in Martinsburg, West Virginia, called Bad Habits. And typically the shows are really great there. I really enjoy doing comedy there.
Yeah.
Because there's just no hope in that whole city, and people are just so grateful to laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a
shout out to Martinsburg.
Yeah.
Save some fentanyl for me.
You're from a smaller rural area,
mm-hmm,
Milford, Virginia.
Correct.
And that really might not be the first place that comes to mind when we think of comedy hubs, wouldn't you think?
Correct. Yeah. It's not, no one's ever brought it up.
Never thought that. Yeah. Oh, Milford. I got to move there for comedy.
No, it's so small. It's so small, in fact, that it's actually Sparta, Virginia. But they took away our postal code and our post office and just said that we were Milford.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that keeping it simple. So how has your local community then influenced your comedic style? And what are some challenges you've faced as a comedian outside the major entertainment centers?
Well, my neighbors don't. I guess they know. They know passively that I do comedy. They're not going to drive an hour and a half to my shows.
Mm.
I do get some material out of living in rural America. My neighbor is actually a cop. I do have a joke about when your cop neighbor gives you a bag of weed. Mm. So I do draw from it. Things like, of course, it's not as relevant now, but I did have a joke for a while about how it was different going through a pandemic, living in the middle of nowhere versus living in a city, because I thought that it was going to be great. But then you have things like you end up having to go 50 miles, you know, one way to get your COVID vaccine for work. But then that one spot within 50 miles is a Food Lion, you know, so I had a bit about getting vaccinated at a Food Lion.
Got vaccinated at a Food Lion?
I did. Yep. Yep.
I guess they do that.
They shouldn't have, but they did. I actually, part of the bit that's true is I was sitting next to a frozen display case with a sign that said Jimmy Dean breakfast bowls, 2 for $5.
Okay. Next to the vaccinated area.
Yep. Yep.
Okay. That's a different experience.
It was. It was good. It was great.
Well, from open mics to headlining shows, you've performed at various venues.
Mm-hmm.
Could you share a memorable onstage experience that has had a significant impact on your career as a comedian?
Sure. Especially, you know, starting out, you end up at such a wide variety of of venues. I did, I don't know, maybe it's because I'm a comic, I want to default to like the worst. Mm. I did a free show with one other comic buddy as a favor. It was in a church at 10 a.m. on a Saturday, and it was supposed to be like a fundraiser for rehab services that the church offered. And so the church was like a quarter filled, full of various relatives there to support their crackhead uncles and aunts. And nobody wanted to be there. And they they did not want to be, and they sure did not want to hear anyone try and tell jokes at 10 in the morning. And so, we both just ate it so bad with all these people staring at us at a church.
How long was the show?
I think we suffered through about 30 minutes between the two of us. It was,
all right. It could have been worse.
It could have been worse. It was just a, like a quick thrown together thing sort of. And you probably run into this. He didn't know a whole lot of clean comics that he could call that could come to a church. Mm. And he's like, "Hey man, can you help me out?" I was like, "Yeah, I'll be there." And he went up first. And he's just eating it into dead silence in this church. And I'm just sitting in the pew in the front row and I'm laughing because I'm like, I'm next.
You're going to be going through it.
I'm going to go up there and eat it just like he's eating it right now. And we did.
Oh my gosh.
We both just bombed into complete silence.
Wow. Yeah, well, actually, I'm fortunate that I do have a good, healthy number of relationships with clean comics, mm-hmm. church comics, yeah. as well as the dirty comics yep. that work clean-ish. I find they're more clean-ish than they
sure.
are clean.
Sure.
But that's our brand, so it all yep. works. But that is an issue for a lot of producers out there mm-hmm. in general in the game, is to find enough comics that do clean comedy for some of the venues out there. Not all of them, but
yeah,
some of
I
them.
Actually, every once in a while I get a panic call from the Funny Bone, because they will have a Christian comic or a clean comic coming through, and whatever lack of communication or just an error, they assume this comic is bringing a feature with them.
Mm.
And then the comic, you know, gets their day of show and they need somebody to do 20 to 25 clean, and they don't
have a whole lot
yeah
to
not a whole lot
from.
To choose from. So I always get the call, "Hey man, can you be here in 4 hours?" You know, things yeah. like that. So it's like, "Yes, I can. Okay. I will show up with jokes."
Should tell them about Don and Chris.
I will. I'll be like, "Hey, you know who you should call? Don't call me."
Those are really some memorable experiences.
Yeah,
there.
They're a lot of fun.
Yeah. You know what else is memorable?
What?
Our sponsor, Preposterous, Shenandoah Valley's only award-winning popcorn.
That is pretty, what award did they win?
You know, they got it through Virginia Living Magazine. I should look that up and know it by the next time, and I will.
This sounds suspect.
It is totally far from it. She's actually, the whole company is amazing, and I just happen to have some right here for you to try.
It's, here it is.
Yeah, maple flavor.
Here it is.
What do you think? Did you give it a
Hold
shot?
On, let me try it.
Mmm. I like the maple a
it
lot.
Tastes. It's like licking a maple tree. This is amazing.
This is really amazing.
And is it so?
It tastes incredible.
But what I was wondering is this made in a facility mm-hmm. that has nuts in it?
No. Actually, I'm glad you brought that up. There are a few reasons off the top of my head that I want to share with you about what I love about this popcorn. Number one, the kernels are grown right here in the Shenandoah Valley. And two, your question, their factory is 100% nut-free. There are no nuts anywhere in their factory or production process.
If a nut tries to run through the roadblock at the mouth of that facility, they will gun it down.
I think maybe that's an exaggeration. For sure. But number two, I can tell you that Preposterous is great for any gifting occasion, perfect for birthdays, anniversaries, or literally anything that comes up. So that means it's a perfect gift because it doesn't require you to know anyone's shirt, shoe, or pant size, which I think is amazing.
That's actually been a problem.
For you?
For me in the past, yeah.
How so?
I don't know. I just love this popcorn so much.
I'm going to be worrying about your pant size. Mm-hmm. If you eat too much of this popcorn.
I know.
And number three, this is the good news, laughers. Preposterous offers laughers a discount. That's right, laughers. When you order yours today, be sure to use promo code LAUGH15 to get your 15% discount. Visit preposterous.com, that's preposterous.com, to save on all this yumminess and buy yours today. I love it. Now listen, Nathan, let's get back to some questions for you. Let's do it. Comedy often addresses social issues and current events. I'm wondering, how do you strike a balance between humor and sensitivity when dealing with potentially sensitive topics?
So, really, the time that I'm most on guard against sensitive topics mm-hmm. is if I am hosting a show. Mm. Because, you know, my job is to go out there, kind of take the bullet, get the crowd warmed up, and then bring on the next comic. Mm-hmm. And so I have jokes that you know, might divide the room, and I just won't do those during a hosting set because I think to myself, all right, if I turn this crowd against me, I don't have enough time to get them back, you know, get them hot, and then, you know, bring the next comic on, because I have jokes. I have some that they'll either hit real well or people will get real mad about it. Mm. And so it's sometimes it's hard to tell which way the room is going to take it or what percentage of the room is going to take it, you know, as it was intended as a joke. If I've got enough time, if I'm doing 20, 30 minutes or more, I don't really worry about, you know, hurting people's feelings, because I've got time for, you know, to make them like me again before I close out the show. Yeah, I'm not going to end on a bit like that. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's a lot more about placement in my set rather than, gee, I hope I don't hurt anybody's feelings when I tell this joke, because it's a joke. They're at a comedy show. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, you know, I won't do the whole bit, but yeah,
they have to come see the show.
Yeah, they have to come see the show. Yeah, you have to. And then when you get mad, you'll be like, oh, that was the one he was talking about.
I heard about on the podcast.
Yeah. That was the one he was talking about.
I remember. It's exaggeration. Yes. It's comedy.
It's hyperbole.
Right.
He didn't really mean it like that.
What kinds of topics do you like to write about and perform?
I used to really enjoy doing some current events jokes, mm-hmm. even just as a writing exercise, because sometimes it'll lead to the sort of bit for me that I can keep it around. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's only good for a week or two, you know, and then everybody forgets about it. But even if it's something that's only good for a week or two, I still really enjoy it as a writing exercise and just learning how to perform better all the time. I've struggled a little bit recently, because I would do personal bits, but going through a divorce right now, I have material about it, but oftentimes the way I deliver it, I kind of bring the energy level down too much. Mm-hmm. If I've got the energy level up pretty high with the crowd, I can throw in some divorce jokes, but if I keep kind of piling them on, sometimes it's like I am like making the energy in the room weird by doing it. That's something that's actually been difficult for my writing as of late, because I want to write about what I'm going through. I want to write about my experiences. I want to make bits that are personal. But I know eventually I'll be at a place where I can do that material without making it weird, but I'm just not quite there yet, you know, 'cause I'm still in the thick of it.
Yeah, I've had some mentors talk about that, just in general, mm-hmm. in how that, you know, in the writing process, very great and while you're going through it to write about it,
yep.
but then when it's going to be comedy gold is when you're past it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Got to figure out how to especially the energy of the delivery is real important for me in a lot of my material. And I can tell when I'm not doing it right, you mm-hmm. know, so.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think there's something to going through something and the emotions that come with it, mm-hmm. which is a natural, you know, human process.
Yeah.
Process difficult things, takes a minute. But then hindsight's 20/20 and you can laugh about it when you're on the other side. It can be very relatable.
I'm laughing about it right now. Comics have been, you know, all my comic friends have shown no mercy. At all, and all, and that's been one of the things that's really helped me out is being able to laugh through the entire thing.
Yeah,
and you know, even when you don't feel like it, your comic buddies are right there to drag you,
yeah,
and drag you through it with laughs.
Right, again, back to the healing power of laughter. Mm-hmm. You know, we can get through a lot more when we. I mean, you do need to deal with it, but it does give you a reset button in life when you can laugh about it, the difficult things too. When it's time.
And you know what helps dealing with things that are difficult?
Popcorn.
Yes. Pre-popstress. Maple-flavored popcorn.
It's so good.
If there were nuts anywhere in this facility, it wouldn't do anything for me, but it would just be garbage. But this popcorn is amazing.
It really is. It's addicting. Mm-hmm. It's going to be gone before we're done with this interview. I can tell you that mm-hmm. right now. Well, Nathan is a successful comedian. You have to have encountered various comedians who have inspired you. Who are some of your comedic influences, and how have they shaped your approach to comedy?
Really, the comic that I admire the most, and a lot of people that have known me for a while are surprised by this, because his style is very much the opposite of my style, is Doug Stanhope. That is my... That really is the comic that I admire tremendously. His writing is incredible, and yeah, he's definitely not clean by any stretch. Mm. But it's definitely been a big influence on the way that I write. When he writes a premise, he approaches it almost as though he's going to defend it in court, mm-hmm. just to make sure that every aspect of the bit is tight and that he's actually gotten every little possible laugh out of the bit that he could.
Oh.
And it's I can't do it obviously in the way that he does, but it's a really interesting thing to watch. I've gotten to see him do a couple of workout sets, mm-hmm. You know, when the bits aren't quite finished yet, and those were both incredible.
Really?
Just seeing the process of how he works out stuff.
Where is he based out of?
He is based out of Bisbee, Arizona.
Okay. So he's a tag master, what we call tag.
Yeah, and Bisbee, yeah. You know, similar to Sparta, Virginia, not thought of as a comedy mecca.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So he's in a rural area as well. Okay. So he's got a high rate of what we call laughs per minute, is what you're telling me.
He's got some longer bits where he built, you know, where he builds up to sort of make a case for things. I wouldn't say he's the punchiest comic. A lot of his bits are longer form.
Okay.
But just like any comic that's been doing it for whatever 30 plus years, he has, especially some of his earlier material, is very punchy. It's boom, 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 boom. Mm-hmm. But he's got a lot of longer form stuff too.
Okay, so it's like storytelling comic.
Yeah, he does. Okay. He does a fair amount of that too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, laughers that may not be familiar with the term tag, you have a setup. It's like getting people ready for your punchline, which is the laugh part for the audience members. And then a tag is like an additional punchline to give some frame of reference there, give them some education. What do you think? Do you have any thoughts about that?
I think they're taking notes right now. I can hear the scribble of their pencils as they write down what a tag is and its definition. But I agree with that.
Yeah.
I like tags. They're fun.
I'm working on those myself. Timing and delivery, though, are also crucial in comedy. How do you practice and refine these skills? And what advice would you give to aspiring comedians looking to enhance their comedic presence on stage?
Just like anything in comedy, I just get out there, I do it, I try it differently. One thing that I do, because I live in the middle of nowhere, I'm kind of equidistant to a lot of places. It's 2 hours to Virginia Beach for me. It's 2 hours to D.C. Charlottesville, also 2 hours. Richmond's a little over an hour. So what I like to do in a week, if I've got a new bit, is maybe hit DC on Monday, then hit Richmond on Tuesday, then I guess Charlottesville just has the Monday mic. But if I can take the same material and get it in front of a different audience, you know, day after day after day, then I can really kind of play around with it, and it's still fresh for that same crowd. So that's but as far as advice, I don't have a ton of advice for people starting out in comedy, but just you have to get up and talk into a microphone, and you have to do it. You have to record yourself. You have to listen back to it, because oftentimes the things that actually hit really well, the things that people laugh at, aren't necessarily the way that you remember it. I've been really surprised listening back to recordings, the things that consistently hit well, things that I felt like were throwaway lines, just something that I said that, you know, turned into, you know, the best part of a bit. But yeah, just do it over and over and over again and record it and listen to it.
Are you pretty religious about that then? So you go record it, come back the next morning over coffee and listen to it?
So I go in spurts where I record constantly, and then I go, because I'm one of the last surviving members of American society that still has a flip phone. So I can't just put my phone. I did have a bit about how I call myself and set the phone down on the stool and then just listen back to the voicemail that I leave myself as recording my set. But it sounded, I actually have a little dedicated recorder. Typically what I do when I record a set is I will make myself listen to it immediately. Like as soon as I get in the car to drive home, I hate listening to myself almost as much as I hate watching myself. But I will make myself just sit down and listen to it, because if I don't do it right away, I won't listen to it. I'll be like, I don't want to.
Giving yourself excuses.
I don't want to listen back to that. I don't want to hear me tell jokes. But yeah, recording it and then listening to it right away. And then oftentimes, especially if I have kind of a surprise in there, like, oh, this part is hitting way better than I thought it would, or why does this part never work? I'll make notes in my notebook. I write a lot, long form in a notebook. I have kind of a larger notebook that I use. And I just, when a bit is getting closer to finished, it's just pages and pages of written word, and almost all of them are crossed out. I just, you know, just write out everything long form and then just cross out everything that doesn't get a laugh.
So that your process? You write it out longhand. Mm-hmm. Do you transfer it to Word document?
No, it's all in the notebook. If I leave my notebook behind somewhere, my life is over.
Okay.
I do have my phone number written many places in the notebook, and then also I write prominently, like, these are just jokes.
Okay.
Because a lot of my handwriting, especially because I'll write, what joke I did at every mic that I was at. So I'll put the date, the mic, and then what material that I did, and make some notes, like if things hit well or whatever. But that especially, if you just open it and see that, it looks like a manifesto. So it's important that I put, like, these are just jokes.
Okay. Yeah. And you have just one notebook, or you've had gone through a few of them over your time?
So I have, what I essentially have is a leather sleeve that accepts inserts. And so I will have at any given time 3 or 4 of those inserts in there. And then I will kind of retire the oldest and put a new one in there. So I have like a ever renewing notebook.
Yeah, it's so interesting to me to talk to the comedians, because
everybody's different.
Right.
Yeah, everybody
find their
does
own
a different
process, you know, that works for them.
Yep.
And that's the one working for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big thing, I think, for new comics, or for all of us really, is to carry something on us, as this is as a side, but helps, that is to carry something on us where we get a funny idea or something happens in a premise, we have some way of storing that idea.
You have to write it down right away.
If you don't write it down right away, if you think you're going to remember it the next hour or the next day,
never remember it.
Forget about it.
I have so many times I've failed to do that, and then I'd be thinking, what was it? Well, because it was good. I'll be like, no, that was good. I have to be able to. I'll keep trying to think back to what I was doing that day, and then it's always gone.
It's just gone
forever.
Yeah. So how do you record those moments? I have a jokes folder on my phone. That's how I do it.
I always
on the go.
I always have my notebook with me.
Okay.
I'm that kind of loser. I just have my comedy note. Sometimes I'll be like, stop.
You got to pull over. Yeah, I've done that before.
I have put my hand up just like, hey, I'm sorry. I got to write this down real quick. Not trying to be rude.
Exactly. Even just enough just to help you jog your memory when you go sit down to write some more.
Yeah, and then somebody looks at your notebook and they see you wrote like Fed Exorcist and they're like, you stopped the conversation to write down Fed Exorcist.
One of our comics that we enjoy working with, Dwayne White. Do you know Dwayne White?
Oh, yeah.
White?
Yeah, I know Dwayne real well.
Oh, yeah, I love Dwayne. Yeah. So he wrote down his set list, and he took a picture of it and put it on his social media, because if you looked at his set list, you'd be wondering about his mental health.
Yeah, you'd call the police. You'd be like, so I don't know what they're planning
just based
to
on
do.
Yeah.
It's not a very organized plan, but someone is planning to do something terrible here.
And that's because, again, laughers may not be familiar with comedy. So comedians tend to title their jokes or their bits, and then the set list is a list of those titles. And that's a memory jogger for us when we plan our sets to get up and go perform. So some of those set lists, you will wonder what is going on in our heads.
Yep.
But it turns out great when we get a chance to connect with the audiences and share our humor. And I enjoy that part. I enjoy connecting with the audiences. Mm-hmm. And I take it you do too if you're doing so much crowd work.
I enjoy attacking the audiences. to make me feel better about myself. Enjoy attacking the audience.
Do not fear people going to Bricks and Columns. He's an exaggerator.
Yeah, just sit anywhere but the front row, because then I can't see you or talk to you. I don't know why people feel like they can scare people off from the show. Don't be scared. Don't be scared.
Be brave. He's messing with you. But we are talking about connecting. So let's do that. Laughter is a unique way of doing that with people from all different kinds and walks of life. Can you share an experience where your comedy brought together a diverse audience and created an unforgettable moment or something along those lines?
Well, I did actually have a pretty unforgettable comedy moment on the way over here. So I am not at the level where I get recognized very often, but it's happened a couple of times,
you know,
just out in public. And I was traveling through Richmond on the interstate on the way here today, and I got pulled over because I had a dead inspection.
Okay.
Fair and square. Got pulled over. And the cop said, I feel like I've seen you somewhere before.
Okay.
And he was like, have I stopped you before? And I was like, no, sir. And he's like, your face seems very familiar. I was like, well, I do comedy. I was like, I actually do comedy in Richmond quite a bit. And he's like, oh, that's it. And then
no
he's
way.
Like, here's your ticket. So yeah,
he still gave me a ticket.
Yeah. Yeah. No mercy.
What's up with that?
No mercy. But yeah, it was, I was just like, wow. Okay. I got recognized by a state trooper and I got my ticket immediately after. It was, sometimes comedy makes everything work out.
He went like, hey, how about I perform for you again and see if we can't get rid of this ticket?
No, he wasn't having any of it.
No.
He wasn't having any of it.
He enjoyed recognizing you.
It was when he recognized me, I was like, oh, good. And then he was just like, oh, nope. Nope. All right. I see what you're up to.
He might have had a quota or something.
Maybe so.
Was it? But that was on the way up here?
Yeah, it was on the way here today.
You got a ticket on the way up to here?
I got a ticket on the way here today. It was dead inspection, though. It was fair and square.
Yeah, it is fair and square.
It's fair and square.
Those things can get missed when you're going through a life of transition.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that you're going through right
now. Or when you stare at it every day as you're driving miles upon miles for comedy and you're like, I'm not going to get this thing inspected. Just start thinking, like, I'm going to fight the power. I'm not going to get my car inspected. And you get a ticket and you're like, oh, I need to get this inspected.
Next time we see you, we'll have that done, I imagine.
Definitely. Definitely. As surely as there are no nuts in the facility where they make this great popcorn, I will have my inspection.
There we go.
Done. I'll have it done.
Excellent. So, laughers, when you go to the August 12th show at Bricks and Columns, you can ask Nathan if he took care of that.
Follow me to my car and see if it's inspected. Follow me home.
That'll be great. You do travel a lot for comedy.
A lot. Yep.
Yeah. And that is both exhilarating and exhausting. Mm-hmm. What we would call you is a road comic.
I do. I really love driving. Yeah. It's one of cars and driving are, it's one of my favorite things. And so, but it still is a grind. You know, if you're driving back from Virginia Beach and it's 2:30 in the morning and it's, you know, there's not a lot of glamour in that. Yeah. It's a real driver, for me to not bomb, because bombing and then having to drive home 2 hours and just sit there in silence thinking about bombing the entire time is
just not fun.
No, there's so much windshield time, so much, time for thinking. So have a hot set.
Yes.
Then you feel good all the way home.
That's always the goal. Yes.
Then you feel good all the way home.
This wasn't planned, but segue, you know, and I'll come back to more about that last question, but you have restored a lot of cars, right?
Yeah, I worked in automotive restoration for quite a while.
Yeah, so these are like classic cars that you restored? Or?
Yeah, it was, so my specialty is antique Toyotas, primarily Toyota Land Cruisers, the ones that I was particularly knowledgeable about were the early ones, like the early 3-speed trucks.
What years would that be for cars?
Pre 74.
Okay.
So a lot of early Toyotas. Maybe the earliest one that I can think of that I worked on was a 64.
Okay. Oh wow, we have had another headliner comic on our show since. Back in the Richmond area now, and he restores cars. That's David Beck.
Oh yeah, I've bumped into Beck before. Yeah, he's a big fan of the what's the little Nissan Sentra SER?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got a couple of those. Yeah. I've talked to Beck before.
Yeah, and had some car shop talk.
Yeah, we talked about tires or something dumb.
That's fun. I love that. I wanted to.
Do you want to talk about tires?
Not really.
Because we could talk about tires a long time.
I couldn't, though, so that'll be short. I want to know what some of the behind-the-scenes aspects of touring that there are most people may not be aware of, and how you maintain your energy and through enthusiasm throughout the journey of as a road comic.
I guess I don't always. Sometimes I try and work up just enough anger right before a set to have a good hot set. I don't know. It's whenever I show up somewhere, I never know. You know, I don't often know, like, hey, is this going to be a fun venue? Is this going to be terrible? And oftentimes my initial assessment is wrong about that. You know, I'll be like, oh, this dive bar, this one's going to be rough. You know, but then it turns out it's the best people working there. The owner's great. He's showering us with, you know, free food and drink. And, you end up with a hot crowd, and it's... I don't know. I've had some really kind of surprising things. I have this rule in my head that in order for it to be kind of possible to have a hot set, you need to have at least one audience member per minute.
What does that mean?
So like, can you do a hot 5 minutes in front of five people? It's like you could.
Yeah.
Could you do a hot hour and a half, you know, in front of five people? It'd be tougher.
Yes.
So same thing. So if 20 people, you're doing 20 minutes. I'm like, ugh, okay, it's enough, you know, it's enough people to work with. But, I had a headlining set in front of like 20 folks at a wine bar. And I was like, this is going to be rough, but it ended up being one of the hottest crowds I've had, period.
Oh, that's great.
So yeah, it was a blast. So it is sort of surprising. Just how different every venue is, how different every crowd is. The material that upset certain crowds, it's like, oh, that's an odd one. I didn't expect you guys to get upset by that. The things that they like. I don't know. It's just constantly, especially with crowd work, kind of poking and prodding, trying to figure out what these people are up to and how you can turn it against them with your words. But not at the winery.
No.
It's not going to happen at the winery.
That's such a fun place. I can't wait for you to see it.
I haven't been there. I'm not usually allowed at wineries.
But. Yeah. It's a really great place. And the views are stunning
Very
out
cool.
there. It's going to be amazing. I can't wait for it. We're actually, are planning to do it outside if the weather's nice.
Yeah.
But it's also a wedding venue, so rain or weather, we can easily bring it inside.
Okay.
Either way is going to be beautiful, and
cool.
Either way is going to be a whole lot of fun.
Yeah.
So
sounds exciting. Forward.
I know.
I'll show up with jokes.
Yeah. You'll show up with lots of jokes. I like that. Apart from performing, you also create online content for your YouTube channel. How has the digital era influenced your career as a comedian? And what role do you see platforms like YouTube playing in the future of comedy?
Well, obviously, you have seen both of my videos that I have on YouTube.
You have a couple more than two videos.
I do have
exaggerator.
A couple more. There is my social media presence is very poor. I for a while I was more worried about burning jokes but I really should not care about that and actually put clips out. I don't do much in the way of clips. But the only thing I post on social media at all is comedy, but it's mostly just comedy flyers to my upcoming shows and things like that. As far as material and I know the crowd work clips are popular and people have success with them, but I don't know. I really don't have a good excuse. I should have much more of a social media presence or a website.
Yeah. Do you think that's really important for comedians today to have social media presence?
I do, because a lot of the traditional venues, something like Comedy Central, doesn't have, it's not the same path to success that it used to be. And now people are having much greater success just by having their own viral clips and things like that. Or even someone like Winston or Nick Dees, who are getting people buying tickets coming out to their shows because they've seen their clips, on Instagram and whatnot.
Yeah. That's true.
So I'm just really behind the curve on that.
Yeah, we're working on that too. Chris, my husband, also a comic, and I got a better camera and taking footage and realizing we don't have to put the whole thing out there. We can just put short clips, which works for people right now too. It's just short clips. There's a whole lot going on in this world. And they do want to laugh. They just want to have a quick minute to do that and then go on.
And go on to the next thing.
Mm-hmm. I think that's really good. Do you see yourself working on that in the next year or so?
I do, because I'm an optimist.
I'm
one of those comedic optimists. So I know that I'm going to get better at social media.
We can get better at anything we put our mind to, that's for sure. I love that. And you got another show coming up here where you're working with us again.
I do. It's exciting.
It is. What do you like? What do you like most about working with X2 Comedy?
I like it that after the show they let me sleep in their basement.
We do that.
Yeah, that was super handy. I had two very far away shows back to back that weekend, and that you saved me a lot of driving in the middle of the night. That was very cool. I like bookers that are consistent.
Yeah,
there are a lot of flaky bookers out there. If there's a booker listening to this right now, it's not you that I'm talking about. I'm talking about other bookers. No, you folks are real cool to work with. I like doing the clean shows and stuff like that. I don't mind doing the dirty shows, but I just don't do any dirty material on the dirty shows.
Okay.
I enjoy the hospitality, the consistency. Every time I've been out, you've had a real crowd there.
Mm-hmm.
There's still plenty of bar shows. I show up and it's like, hey, it's five people. It's like, well, I'm doing jokes for five people. I'm doing it. But I sure don't mind, like a full little theater or a winery.
Yeah.
So if there are five people at the winery, I'm not going to leave or anything. I'll still tell jokes.
That's good. We'll have more than that. It's
okay.
A great place.
Okay.
And people love coming out there.
Have you, how many shows have you done at this winery?
This will be the third show.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah. So we're excited about that.
And the last after my set.
he keeps threatening to scare you people, and he's so opposite.
I don't even say bad words. What's the worst thing that could happen if we start talking to you?
Right? You would just define yourself as a clean comedian.
Yeah.
Would you?
Yeah. I don't say bad words.
Yeah. No. I mean, you stretch people in terms of...
I might stretch them on subject matter a little bit.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
I would agree with that. are some of your subject matter? You talked about writing about divorce, but what are you performing right now in terms of subject matter? What are you talking about?
What am I talking about?
Yeah. Or what are some of your favorites that you have talked about, if that's easier to come to mind? Because I know we
One of my favorite jokes that I will almost certainly do it at the winery, so I won't ruin the punchline. But one of my favorite bits that I'm doing is about them cloning a mammoth, which is a real thing.
Yeah, and that's
right. It's something they're actually going to do, and I think they have a plan for the mammoth that they clone, and I don't think it's a good plan. And so I talk about that.
You talk about the plan.
I talk about their poor plan for their freshly cloned mammoth. It's not good. I will open up my sets kind of doing more of my rural American material, just kind of establishing like, hey, it's a little bit about me. This is who I am. You know, this is what I do. And then especially if maybe later on, if I do end up, say, poking fun at someone in the crowd, then I might have a little bit more of that rural American material kind of in my back pocket to make fun of myself again. You know, saying like, hey, yep, I know. I'm in no position to make fun of you because these are the things that are wrong with me.
Yeah.
Type thing. Because it helps to helps to keep everything fun. Because even if you're messing, you know, with somebody with some crowd work, the most important thing is that the show needs to be fun.
Yes.
And so that's something that's always in the back of my mind that I'm constantly thinking about is you know, is just making the show fun, because that's why people are there. They're there to laugh. They're there to have a good time.
Have a good time and to relax.
Yeah, or sometimes to show you memorial tattoos of their dead son and get mad.
Yeah, well, people go. You never know where they are in life or what just happened to them and why.
That guy might be at the winery.
Yeah, he could be.
He could be there
and be in a better spot.
No, I don't know. I think he was just on the way down.
It's hard sometimes.
He just got out of prison. He had just gotten out of prison.
Oh, see? That's a lot to process.
He's probably already back.
I hope not. Let's hope not.
Okay. I'm sure he's fine.
What happened to the optimist?
I'm sure he works for preposterous, preposterous popcorn. He's in charge of watching out for nuts.
Nuts.
Make sure none of them get in there.
And I think I would be scared of him. I don't think a single nut would make it in there.
I don't think they would.
Have you ever performed at a winery before?
I have. I performed at a winery in Ashland, Virginia.
Okay.
Right next to Highway 1.
All right.
Because that's good for the grapes.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Okay. Grapes and asphalt go together well, because the asphalt retains the heat of the sun.
Are you kidding right now?
Grapes keep growing at night. Definitely not. I know a lot about wine.
Do you really?
No.
See, I thought he was making all this up. Yep. I just was double checking myself.
You should.
I knew I better check that out.
You should.
This has been a whole lot of fun. I wonder what you think is going to come up for you next. Are you have some projects or future plans that you're excited about that you're going to be doing here that you can share with the laughers? In terms of what's next for you in comedy?
It's hard for me not to make a divorce joke right now. Let's see. After I'm done losing my house, I'm looking forward to getting out and hitting the road more. Plan to run up and maybe hit Cleveland for a week, then bounce over to Chicago for a week, and just hit some different cities, tell some jokes, shake hands, be nice to people. Yeah. And just meet other comics. You know, just living the exact same struggles that I am.
Yeah. Do you have a process when you travel on the road for comedy? Like, do you stay with people that you know in the cities that you're visiting, or you do hotels or a combination? Or
well, right now I have an RV, and so that makes some things easier, and then some things more difficult. Obviously, you know, you're not going to find a place to park that in downtown Chicago. Mm-hmm. And things of that nature. But yeah, the RV makes where you're staying typically pretty easy. I only use it if I'm going to be in somewhere for like a week or longer. Otherwise, it's not cost effective to drive it there. Okay. But oftentimes, especially in the cooler months, I will just go to, after a show, go to like a, if it's far away, go to a nearby wildlife management area where you can camp for free. And I do a lot of camping after shows in the cooler weather. yeah, that's kind of, I don't know. I stay pretty flexible.
Yeah. Where's your favorite place you've been done comedy so far, or city, I should say?
Favorite city. It has to be the Shenandoah Valley because of the people and the wineries and the popcorn, and it all just kind of comes together.
That was such an excellent answer.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. It's usually not a city. It's usually more about a venue. And again, sometimes I get there in the venue, I'm like, oh, this is going to be rough. And then it turns out it's a blast. It's really, it doesn't seem to matter so much where it is. It's mostly, did people show up there ready to laugh? You know, that, that makes it way easier when people are there and they're there for comedy and they're ready to laugh. That's kind of the most fun aspect of it.
Yeah, that's really great. I got another question I thought of that I want to ask before we wrap up.
Okay, let's do it.
Well, two, actually. Okay. Part one, how long have you been doing comedy?
A little more than 5 years. So I'm halfway to actually becoming a comedian.
Yeah, that's actually, he's not kidding, for real.
Yeah, there's like the 10-year rule.
Yeah.
So I'm halfway there.
You're halfway there. Wow, that's really cool. And then my second question is, if you had to do it all over again, knowing what you know now, what would you have done differently?
There's a part of me that would have wanted to start sooner. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, I think back to like my 20-year-old self, and then I think, what would I have had to say? Mm-hmm. You know? For the most part, other than, you know, scolding myself for not doing enough social media, I've been pretty happy with the way it's gone. Rather than trying to think of like, oh, what should I have done different? I kind of mostly focus on like, okay, how can I make this better? You know, from where it is now.
For somebody just starting out, we're going to open mic after this.
Yes.
And there's going to be a young person that's reached out to X2 Comedy, wants to try comedy, and he's put something together and he's going to do it tonight. I'm excited to see that. And so he would be brand new.
Okay.
Right?
So so could he potentially replace me as the headliner at the winery?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
not ready.
He's not ready. You haven't heard him. How do you know he's not ready? He could get up there and do a hot hour at this mic.
That's so funny, and we're going to get back to what I was going to talk about there. But to that point, that funny point, that is one thing you will see in new comics a lot. They think, oh, I had some success at this open mic, and now I can headline tomorrow. And what a lot of people don't realize with this craft is that it is, on the performer side, such a craft, and it takes time to develop it and master it enough to be a paid headliner.
Yeah, it's hard work.
It is hard. It's fun hard work.
It is.
But it's hard work.
But it's a lot of work. Yeah.
Yeah. So this young person, or any person, because I say it's never too late. I got started late. You got started later too.
If someone started as late as I did, I'd say don't do it.
Really?
I'd say you should just give up.
Really? You're kidding. See, exaggerator.
Just
feel like titling this podcast Nathan Carlson
Exaggerator. Exaggerator.
But all seriousness, where somebody who's just starting out in comedy, you know, and they are, you know, you are 5 years ahead. You are 5 years ahead of them. What would be your advice to them to have the most successful career possible, or the most success possible as a new comedian? What kind of advice would you give?
I'm going to steal a quote.
Okay, that's
from
fair.
From Doug Stanhope.
Okay.
He said something to the effect of, I can't give you advice in comedy because then I can only tell you how to be like me.
Oh, and I love that,
because,
actually.
And I think it's true, because writing for everyone is so different. I mean, we talked about, you know, how different people's writing processes are. Everyone's performance is different.
Mm-hmm.
And every venue you go to is different, especially before you get a fan base and you're just going to whatever show will book you. It's, you know, who knows what kind of crowd you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing I can say is just hit every mic you can hit. even when you don't feel like going out and telling jokes to no one, you know, at a bar that you know nobody's going to be there, go do it anyway. But yeah, other than just do as much comedy as possible, write as much as possible, whatever that means for you. Not everybody writes the same way. Some people do actually write on stage primarily. But yeah, whatever you do, just actually write jokes and yeah, just hit as many mics as you can.
Yeah, I think that's a, getting up. There's nothing like getting up on a mic. It's not
that. Yeah, there's no substitute for it.
There really isn't. Yeah, you got to get up and do it. That's it, you know? So as we wrap up this conversation, you've shared with us some things that you've caught coming up, which thank you for that. But also, how best can the laughers stay updated with your latest endeavors on social media that you're working on?
Yeah.
And otherwise.
Oh, yeah. The only thing I post on social media is comedy. I will never tell you who to vote for. I might tell you which popcorn to buy, but that's...
that's a good note.
That'd be rare. So just follow me on Instagram at questionably funny. And that's the best way to keep up with what I'm doing. And again, the only thing I do is post comedy on there.
Okay. Why did you choose questionably funny for a social media name? That's curious for a comedian.
This is where it gets dark. So for a while I hosted a bunch of trivias and the questionably funny was just the brand. For the trivias. I wrote all my own questions, and I kept the questions open-ended so that I could often get a lot of funny wrong answers, and then you can crowd work people and roast people during a trivia. So I tried to make it as much of a comedic opportunity as possible, but so that's a deep, dark secret. It's not quite as bad as if I admitted to being in an improv troupe or something like that, but it's a close second.
Admitted to being in an improv troupe.
Yeah.
I've been in an improv troupe.
I know. But you're not anymore. You got out, right?
No, I got out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now it's just straight stand up.
Yeah. Yeah. You're never going back, are you?
I don't have any
No, you're
any
not.
Desire to
you're
do
not.
That. I have some friends in improv. They're pretty funny.
I know. Eventually they'll get out. Eventually they'll be okay.
You don't like improv?
Not
your thing.
No.
You know, what's so interesting about that is you'll talk to improv artists and oftentimes stand-up is not their thing and vice versa. Not across the board, not with everybody.
Sure.
But that tends to be what I see. It tends to be one or the other is the comics bailiwick.
Man, I like this popcorn.
Oh my goodness. So we got Questionably Funny is your handle on both Facebook and Instagram.
I'm just Nathan Carlson on Instagram.
Okay. And Questionably.
I'm sorry. Nathan Carlson on Facebook.
On Facebook.
And then Questionably Funny on Instagram.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So laughers, that's the best way that you can follow what Nathan is doing. We'll be sure to put that information for you in the show notes, as well as that promo code LAUGH15. So you can get that 15% discount on your preposterous popcorn.
Get that nut-free corn.
Get it today. And thank you for coming to the show, Nathan. This has been a blast. I love chatting it up with you on all things comedy today. And thanks again for coming on the show.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me. It was fun.
It is fun. And laughers, you can see Nathan perform live as our headliner for X2 Comedy Night at Bricks and Columns Vineyards in McGackiesville, Virginia. It's always a pleasure to do comedy at this vineyard where the wine is flowing, the fun is just right, and the laughing is easy. Buy your tickets today at x2comedy.com and don't miss out. Single tickets are just $20, or you can bring someone and save $5 and get the couple ticket for just $35. We can't wait to see you there. And lastly, and most importantly, thanks for tuning in, laughers. Out of all the podcasts out there, you picked us, and we think that's pretty darn special, just like you. Until next time, keep smiling. Bye.
Goodbye, everybody.
Laughers, that was Bruno, X2 Comedy's mascot. That's my dog. All right. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. We'll be dropping a new podcast every Wednesday, so check back for another uplifting episode. Come to an X2 Comedy show or let us bring one to you. To find out more, head to x2comedy.com. Be sure to share this podcast with a friend, and until next time, cheers.